Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Yesterday we went out into the streets in Toronto to distribute books and to chant Hare Krishna so people could hear us. And also we came prepared with prasadam for distribution to people that we meet. And devotees had many wonderful experiences. The first person that stopped for me was a man from Mauritius, I think. Where was he from? That first fellow who we took over, went to back to his house. Who was with me? Where was he from, Mukunda? Nick, yeah. Okay.
Somebody said he's from Africa.
He was an African young man from Africa, and so he was neutral. I showed him the book, and then he said he was spiritually inclined. He already knew he was already spiritual and everything, and we agreed with that, and appreciated him. And then I showed him more about the Bhagavad Gita and so forth. And then I told him that we don't sell the book, but if he'd like to give something to help, we don't need the money, but if you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects you to all the teachers who have passed it down over many generations and allows you to enter into the book in a very deep way. And he thought that was a good idea, but he didn't have any money. Or he said he had to go somewhere or see somebody to find the money. And so it finally came around, he said, the money's at home. And I said, great, let's go to your house. So we all followed him. There were about five of us. Followed him up the street about 5 minutes to where his apartment was. And I was thinking as we were walking up there that what lengths will we go to bring one person to Krishna consciousness? And what do you have to do? When somebody's flapping in the breeze here in the material world, they may flap in all different directions. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mamaivam shujiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manakshashtani indriyani prakriti stani karshati. He said, these are my parts and parcels. And they're in the material world and they're struggling, or Prabhupada uses the word grappling. Does anybody here know about wrestling? Greco-American wrestling? Yeah? Grappling? Mukunda knows. You know a lot of stuff. Grappling is very intense, actually. When wrestlers grab each other, like when Krishna went into the assembly in Mathura, Krishna and Balaram entered. They were up against Chanura and Mushtika, and they had to grapple. And it's described in the Bhagavatam how shoulder to shoulder, chest to chest, arm to arm, a show of strength, holding on to each other, trying to flip the opponent in such a way to get an advantage and so forth. This is grappling. And the living entity is grappling with material nature. And so when we go in to break up the fight, you know, we have to be innovative and find ways to bring the soul back. In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that to bring one person to Krishna consciousness takes gallons of blood, gallons of blood. Everyone has their own unique, complex situation here in the material world. You don't meet anybody that's just a clean slate, except for Shukadeva Goswami. He came out of the womb and he said, I've got nothing to do with this, and he took off. And even before coming out, he said, I know what's out there, I'm not coming out. And Krishna had to come along and say, it's okay, you can come out. You're in the family of Vyasadeva, it's okay. He came out of the womb and he said, nope, sorry, Vyasadeva's sacred thread, you know, ceremony. He said, no, thank you. He just took off for the forest. He said, nothing to do with the material world, but everyone else pretty much has some unique entanglement. It's left over from a previous life. There's momentum in the material world for each soul and an accumulation of complex desires that have combinations and permutations that manifests in a particular body. Shariram yaravapnoti yachchap yukramatishvara grihitvaitani samyati vayur gandam ivashayat. Shotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam granam evacha adishtayam manaschayam vishayan upasevate. Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that just as the breeze that blows over a particular area picks up the scent of that area, in the same way, the consciousness of a living being, because of his contact with the modes of material nature in the material world, it picks up a kind of a certain flavor or scent or stench. And then because of that, because of the force of that consciousness, that creative consciousness, it creates future bodies. And they're custom made. Shotram chakshu sparshanam cha. There's a certain kind of ear, eye, nose, sense of touch, and all these grouped about the mind. And that same mind Krishna talks about when he says, mamayvamsha jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manak shashchan indriyani prakriti stani karshiti. All these senses are grouped about the mind, and the mind has a way in which it is conditioned by the three modes of material nature. We don't see the world the way it is, we see the world the way we are. And so everyone has a complex situation, and they have a designation. So when they come into the world, they get designated as a cat or a dog or a man or a woman. And then it gets even thicker than that, because then you become not just that, but also an American, or you're from South India, or you're Karnataka. And then somebody slaps a name tag on you as soon as you're born and said your name is Dilip. Your new name is Billy Boy, Nincompoop, Schnicky, and then you're stuck with it. And you get designated by the material energy. We get tagged all over the place by all these designations. I think I'm this, I think I'm that. And then I become attached to the designations, especially we see people become nationalistic, and then it gets expressed through sporting events. They live and die, but people kill each other over whether their team wins or not. And they don't even play. They just watch a bunch of guys running around on the field, and then after they say, we won. And so you didn't do anything. You just sat there and watched. And that's pretty much the material experience. You really don't get to do anything, Krishna says. You're just speculating that all these things are happening, and you're attached to the result, because we're attached. We're sentient beings. It means we have sentiments, we have feelings, and we become attached to things. But we're attached to the wrong thing, and we have nothing to do with the material world ultimately. Asanga hyayam purushaha. There's no sangha here, really. We can't make a sangha with this material world except through our desire, and that's illusory, and that becomes a dreamlike situation for the soul. So when we go out to meet people, it's no wonder that they're in some kind of a state. And Prabhupada wrote a letter to all the Sankirtan devotees. We have that on our wall at our house. And he said it's like in an insane asylum. And if you've ever been to one, I haven't been to an insane asylum, but my dad had Alzheimer's before he passed away. And I used to go, there was a point at which my mom couldn't take care of him anymore. And that happens with Alzheimer's. It's practically impossible, because at every moment somebody has to watch the person who has it. And so fortunately we had funding, and we could put him into a place where they take care of Alzheimer's patients. And I would go visit him regularly. And everybody in there had something that they were doing. Like one person was, he'd go around trying to fix everything. He used to be some kind of carpenter or handyman or something like that. And my father was a psychologist. This is ironic, because actually he at San Francisco State University, he would oversee the graduate department of the, and he had a group of students who he supervised to take care of an Alzheimer's home that was their postdoc, you know, stuff that they would do. They would take care of the patients. They were psychology students. They were just finished their PhD, and this is work they had to do. And so he was in charge of the students who were taking care of them. Can we get more air? We got nothing against air, right? Is it possible? Are you sure? I think it's possible. I was here last time, Mukunda. What they do, they open the back door, it makes it cross ventilation. So here it is. Refocus. This is my point. I'm coming to the point. The point is that when my father got in the Alzheimer's home, he thought he was in charge of the place. And the attendants would come in and take care of him. He said, "You're doing a really good job, you know, very good, overseeing the whole thing." And I was just, when I left one day and I was filling up my car with gas to go home, and I watched some guy get out of his brand new SUV, and, you know, he had a spring in his step, and he was thinking, "I'm Mr. SUV, I drive an SUV, I live in a nice neighborhood, and I have a good job, and this is who I am." But that's not who he is, and he could lose it in any second. Kamala jala jala jivana talamala. Not just death comes, but loss of identity, becoming disconnected with the identities that I acquire after so many lives and in this life. It can happen at any time. And that's how tenuous our situation is here in the material world. And so expressing this, when Prabhupada, I said, wrote a letter that he said, like in the insane asylum, some people think they're Napoleon. And apparently Napoleon took a famous picture like this, right? So people walk around all day like, "I'm Napoleon, I'm Napoleon," and somebody else says they're at. And so there's this extreme identity crisis here in the material world. And when we meet people on the street, and Prabhupada said in the insane asylum, sometimes they'll even become violent towards the doctor or so on and so forth. So he said, don't be surprised when you go to teach Krishna consciousness that people will become violent, or they'll have all kinds of special circumstances and needs that you need to take care of to help them. And therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, gallons of blood to save one person from the material world. What is our impetus to do that? Why would we do that? It's not very comfortable to work in an insane asylum. And why do people do that? I always wonder. I see the kinds of people who are nurses and they work in palliative care, or they work in these hospice. You know, hospice, it started off as volunteer work. Now it's become a for-profit organization. I think it's the people who run Kentucky Fried Chicken who also own most of the franchises for... Say redoubt, call or cancel. Cancel. Sorry, I hope that didn't wreck your thing. And I always wonder what motivates people to do those kinds of things. And they actually, you know, they want to do service. They have this calling, they want to do service. And really that's our calling also. But it's the calling, it has to be from compassion, that we feel compassion for others, that this is, you know, our mission, to show compassion, to extend ourselves, to undergo discomfort in our lives for the sake of saving others. This is actually the real tapasya for this age. Our tapasya is not so much going to the forest and sitting down and meditating and so forth. It's a very active kind of tapasya where we live amidst all kinds of clamor and noise and people moving about and so forth in the cities. And this was the mood of Prahlad Maharaj when he said that, "I don't want to go to the forest. I'm not interested in that." He said other yogis go off there and they sit in caves and so forth. He said that's their thing, you know, and it's for them. They're doing it for themselves. He said, but a higher kind of yogi is the yogi who actually sees that people are suffering and that I have to help them. And Prabhupada defines the word violence of stop. It means stopping the preaching of the Krishna consciousness movement. And he said it's violent to not give Krishna consciousness to people when you're capable of giving it. That's how Prabhupada thought. That's how the great yogis think. And Krishna confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita when he says, "Atmaupam yena sarvatra samam pashati yorjuna." He says that the highest yogi is one who has empathy for other living entities and really feels for them. You know, it's hard to come out of whatever comfortable, so-called comfortable situation I have and extend myself to others to give them an opportunity to improve themselves, to come out of their suffering. But Lord Shiva says it in the Bhagavatam when the demigods and the demons were churning the milk ocean. You all remember, right? What mountain did they use? And what did they use for the churning rope? Vasuki. Yeah, it was really funny, actually, because the demons, they were at the back in the beginning, and they started complaining. They said, why do we always have to be at the back? And they said, all right, go to the front. And then as Vasuki started going, fire came out of his mouth, and all the demons were getting burned. I always thought that's a good case for just take what you get in life. Don't try to adjust things, because you may be embarrassed afterwards, think, oh, why didn't I just keep what I had? Anyway, they were churning this ocean, and then poison came out, really deadly poison. It was going to destroy the whole universe. So in order to glorify Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu took all the demigods to Lord Shiva, and they said, please help us. And they offered these beautiful prayers to Shambhu. Vaishnavanam yatam Shambhu. Now here's a Vaishnav. Shiva's a real Vaishnav. He's got compassion for others. And here's what he said. He told them, Tapyante lokatapena sarava prayasojana parama aradananta di purushasyaki latmana. He's talking about what is the highest kind of aradanam. What is the highest service that you can do for others? This is important to know because we're living entities, we're part and parcel of Krishna, and we're servants. And one would want to know, how can I do the best service? What's the highest service? And that's the most satisfying, the most auspicious, the best thing that you can do. So he said, taking trouble on yourself for the sake of saving embodied souls who are suffering in the material world is the best kind of worship you can do. The best kind of puja you can do is to actually give the fire of knowledge, to actually ignite that fire of knowledge within the heart of the conditioned soul who's lost and suffering in the material world since the time immemorial. And actually, we see as we're driving here, there's temples springing up everywhere. There's a mosque, really nice mosque down the road there we saw. And on the right side of the road, there's a temple of Durga. Did you see? New temple of Durga. All over the place, there are these temples springing up. And so the soul, the human being especially, has an impetus to how to do some kind of worship. And they put a lot of time and money and energy into building a place. Let's worship nicely. Let's do this nicely. That's why all these temples, churches all over the place. Canada has some of the nicest churches in the world, especially Montreal, right? Montreal. I know, because I went once and I said, Montreal. And somebody in the back said, it's Montreal, not Montreal. I was like, sorry. I know I'm a Westerner. Yeah, I went to Notre Dame also. They have some of the best churches in the world. On every block, they have these beautiful stone. Because it's the impetus of the soul to actually want to worship God at place. So, but our line, and especially the age we're in, is very special. And it is that the great devotees in our line, starting, of course, with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is not a devotee, but he acts like a devotee, to show what is the highest kind of devotee, showed by example that in Kali Yuga, there is no temple worship. We do a little something for our Pancharatrik Vidhi, but our main focus is not that. Our main focus is, actually it is temple worship. I take that back, but it's a different kind of temple worship. Everyone please say one word for me. Tabernacle.
Tabernacle.
What is a tabernacle, anybody? Somebody from South India tell me what a tabernacle is. You got to be from South India. Please raise your hand and tell me what a tabernacle is. Thank you. So, a tabernacle, it comes from the Jewish faith, and they used to travel, they're nomadic, and they had a moving temple, kind of like the Radha Damodar bus, maybe. They have a moving temple, And they would keep, that's where they would worship God, because they were always on the road, they were moving. So you know what Prabhupada calls the human body? I'll bet you'll never guess now that I gave you a clue. A tabernacle. He says that the souls in this world are within tabernacles. That is, each one of us is living in a tabernacle, a moving temple. Everybody you see on the street in Toronto is in a tabernacle. That it's a moving temple, because the most important, valuable principle, the Krishna, of course, he's not a principle. Krishna is there, and then the soul is there right next to them. That's big news. That's the only news that's really going on in the material world. The rest is all details and not very interesting, and in the end, ultimate end, it's all boring. But that's what's interesting. That the soul is there, and why is he in there? Why is he conditioned in this body? And why is the super soul following him? In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bhoktaram yajnatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantimrichati. If you want peace, you have to find these things out. And one of the things he said, I'm the best friend of the living entity, and I follow him everywhere. And so, what Lord Shiva is saying is, the best kind of puja you can do, aradhanam, the best kind of worship that you can perform, is to go to each tabernacle and there do your puja. How do you do puja? Just like here, we light a fire. This is symbolic, right? We offer fire. Why do we offer fire anyway? Anybody have any idea? Or do we just do it for the heck of it? Huh? Purest of all material elements. Nice. But do we ever think about it? I mean, we do a lot of rituals and things like that. We offer this and that and this and that. And then it's like, why do you do it? We might not think about it very much. It's tradition. But this fire element, it's the purest of elements and so forth. It represents something. But the highest thing Lord Shiva is saying that you can do is take that fire in the form of knowledge, jnana agni, the fire of knowledge. And there in that temple, that person walking down the street, ignite the fire of knowledge in their heart. And what does Krishna say himself in the Bhagavad Gita about those who worship him? He says that the person who ignites the fire of knowledge, the knowledge coming from Bhagavad Gita in the heart of other souls, wherever they go, that is the best servant. He is the best servant who does this, who lights up that fire within the heart of each person. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went village to village, town to town, and Kaviraj Goswami says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he gives a few samples of what he did. For instance, when he went to Kurmakshetra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Kurma the Brahmin. And there he taught Kurma, who had a very beautiful situation, just like you do here. Devotees, pure devotees coming for congregation. And by the way, this is a beautiful place you have here. And that was the nicest welcome ceremony I've ever seen, which epitomizes the... I was thinking when you did that, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of place you have. It matters what's coming out of your heart, you know, welcoming people. I was thinking, in that moment when you were offering all those garlands and welcoming every devotee individually, this was the most beautiful place, and not just Toronto, all of Canada and maybe North America at that moment. On the other hand, I've been to places where, you know, you can be in a castle where they've built, where they've used the finest marble from Italy. And Moroccan something and something from South Africa. And it feels horrible. It's the spirit that you have here. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to visit. It was just like this at Kurmakshetra. There was Kurma. He was leading the people and how to have their local congregation and everything. And Mahaprabhu went and lit the place up. He said, listen, it's Kali Yuga and the time now is for Harinam. And he taught them this chanting of Hare Krishna. And then he told Kurma, he said, you become a guru in this, and you go out and teach it to everybody else. Get everyone else chanting. Go around everywhere. And Kurma wanted to go with him. He said, I'm taking sannyas. I'm going with you. He said, don't even worry about it. Don't come with me. You stay here, you teach everyone how to chant Hare Krishna and spread it everywhere. Every other town and village, go and spread it. And then Kaviraj Goswami says, Mahaprabhu went here, there, and everywhere. You can't keep up with all the places Mahaprabhu has gone. I tried to do it once. I photocopied the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I said, I'm going to every place Mahaprabhu went. And it was very difficult, especially in the time frame, to go all these places. But, you know, he's God. So he went so many places. And Kaviraj Goswami said he did the same thing everywhere he went. He told everyone, do Sankirtan and light the fire of knowledge in the hearts of the people. Go door to door, town to town. So this is the essence of the Krishna consciousness movement. It's to give this fire of knowledge to people everywhere. In the Krishna book, you all know the story of how Krishna and Sudama Brahman lived at the Gurukul. Who is their spiritual master? And Sandipani Muni used to do a fire yajna, so he needed wood, because at that time, that was the way of doing sacrifice. That was the fire back then. So what did good disciples do to help him with the fire? They went to the forest and collected firewood. Any kids here under 15? What happened to Krishna and Sudama when they went out to collect firewood? Something that you'd remember. What happened? For 10 points. Yes, go ahead. Kinda. That's 5 points, I guess. Anybody else under 15? There was a big storm. They were out getting wood, and a storm came up that was so severe they got pinned into the forest. They couldn't get home. And their spiritual master worried about them all night. He went out looking for them. And in the morning, they found them under a tree. They had just barely survived there. And his spiritual master blessed them for being such good disciples, for making the sacrifice and so forth. So there's an interesting verse in the Vedas about this. It says, Tadvignan artam sa gurum eva bigach chet samitpani so shotriyam brahmanishtam. That in order to come to real knowledge, one must approach a spiritual master. And it says, it's emphatic, you have to do that. Tadvignan artam sa gurum eva bigach chet. And then, something very interesting, samitpani, it means you should carry wood in your hands to meet your spiritual master. It means to do some practical menial service. So now, this is what Krishna was doing. It set an example for his spiritual master, carrying wood so the spiritual master could light the fire. So that was a particular age when fires were the main way of offering sacrifice to Yajneshwara. And now, in the Kali Yuga, well, how do we carry the wood? Well, let me put it like this. Wood comes from trees, right? Paper, thank you, Nirkula. That's my wife back there. And paper comes from wood, if I'm not incorrect, huh? And books come from paper. If you carry books for the spiritual master, this is samitpani. This is real samitpani shotriyam brahmanishtam. You're actually, now it's even better because one person takes a book and that fire of knowledge, Gana Agni, lights within their heart. That is the best sacrifice that anyone can possibly do. We build temples here and there, especially in India because it's possible. But really, our main purpose for building temples is to manage the results of our outreach. Of going out, our main purpose is to go door to door. Our main purpose is go town to town and find those people who never would have been touched before by the fire of knowledge. We were in Southern California with a group of devotees and we went to Vietnam Town because we have all these books now. We have books in all these different languages. So let's go meet the Vietnamese people and see how they like Krishna consciousness. It turns out they like it just fine. And we were at this mall, this Vietnamese mall, with our Vietnamese books, and they have these three stories in these malls. So we just kept going around, and then we went up to the third floor, and most of the shops were closed because they no one was renting the space. But we saw a place way down at the end. So we walked all the way down to the end, and we went in the shop, and the woman came out a little surprised to see us like this, and like barely anybody comes up there apparently anyway, and here we come walking in her shop, and she wondered what we were doing, so we started talking to her about the books. And at first she was very tentative and not interested, but by the end she took a book, and when we were walking away, we were thinking, if we hadn't gone up there, she never would have come in contact with Krishna consciousness. And we were feeling so satisfied from that sacrifice, from that yajna of walking up. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. House to house, town to town, he left no stone unturned. And then he deputized everyone wherever he went, and he said, you do the same thing. You go around and meet people. So Prabhupada came to America in the same mood. He brought with him books. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the book. It's the incarnation of Krishna. Krishna swa dhamo pagate dharma ganadi bisaha kalo nashta drishamesha purar narko donodita. After Krishna left this world, the Bhagavatam appeared. And Srila Vyasadeva, out of compassion, wrote this book in order to save people all over the world. Anarto pasanam sakshad bhakti yoga madhoksije lokasya ajanato vidvams chakre satvata samhitam. He knew in the age of Kali people were doomed. And therefore, and you'll see also that the sages at Naimasaranya, what was their purpose in life? They came together for a 1,000-year seminar. I don't know about y'all, what kind of seminars you go to, but I don't go to ones that last 1,000 years. There was a 1,000-year seminar, and what was the topic of the seminar? How to do good for people in Kali Yuga. How to bring them to the highest benefit in Kali Yuga. That's what they were talking about. And Suta Goswami was talking to the sages, and the whole topic of Shukadev Goswami, the whole Bhagavatam comes out in this story. And what was Shukadev Goswami's purpose? Only out of mercy did he travel the world, because he had no interest in the world whatsoever. And that's what devotees do. And that's why Srila Vyasadeva wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's why Prabhupada got on a boat and brought it over here. And the odds against him were staggering. But he knew one thing. If you follow the order, you can't lose. That's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. It doesn't matter who you are. You can be blind, deaf, and dumb. But if you get it in your heart that I'm following the order of the spiritual master, and I don't care what else happens, you're going to win. Because you're connected to the internal potency. That is the internal potency. When Krishna gives an order, that's up for grabs. Anyone can grab it, onto it, and go back home, back to Godhead. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Ye me matam idam nityam anutishtanti manava. He said, I give my orders, you take them, you win. I give my orders, you don't take them, you lose. It's an easy formula. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and he said, become a guru. And Prabhupada said, become a devotee guru. Become a devotee guru and go out door to door and meet people and give them a chance. Light that fire in their heart. Let them know what the Hare Krishna mantra is. Give them Bhagavad Gita. And our banner that flies over ISKCON says, Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasha Abhira Shumba Yavana Kasadaya Yene Chapapi Adapashraya Shaya Shudyanti Tasmai Prabhavishnave Nama. And that means, according to Shukadeva Goswami, has told Maharaj Parikshit, he said, it doesn't matter where you're from. You can be outside the Varnashram system by 100,000 miles. You can be the lowest of the low, born into families that meet together on Thanksgiving dinner to eat a dog. Shwapacha means dog cookers. It doesn't mean they accidentally ate a dog once because it was in a McDonald's or something. It means It means that that's what they do. They go out and they raise dogs so they can eat them. He's talking about people like that in the Bhagavatam. Kirata, Hunanda, Pulinda, Pulkasha. He's naming all these people that have no chance whatsoever of touching the Vedic culture ever in their lives. They're so far off the mark. And he said, every single one of them can come to the perfection of life because of the power of Lord Vishnu that comes through his devotees. And that's what our mission is. It's to save people. That is the essence of our entire process. Jive doi Krishna nam sarva dharma sar. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the great powerhouse of bhakti, who's pumping down this devotional energy through the disciplic succession. We're the Bhaktivinoda Parivar. And he said it. This is our mission statement. Jive doi Krishna nam. These two things, showing compassion to other living beings by loudly chanting the holy name of the Lord. And according to our acharyas, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and our Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the loudest way you can do that is by the distribution of knowledge, and especially they were attached to literature. And we call this the literary kirtan, literary sankirtan. Prabhupada said it's louder. It's the loudest thing that you can do because it goes all over the planet and people hear it everywhere. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started the Paramarthi printing works in his organization. It was a big deal. And he printed 2 magazines a day. Have you ever made a magazine? Anybody? How about a newsletter? 2 people? Does it go out on time every? It's hard to make a newsletter. I mean, it's not hard to make a newsletter. It's hard to keep a newsletter going. Anybody can make a newsletter, but keep it going. They had 2 magazines a day, plus they were printing hundreds of books and distributing them. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took his printing press, and just as you have an altar here, now I want you to imagine something. When this curtain opens, there's the deities here, and then there's another altar right next to the deities, and on it there's sitting a printing press. Do you know what one looks like? There's one in the San Francisco airport. They have it in a case, a printing press. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our Param Guru or Param Param Guru, put one of those on the altar next to the deities, and he said, worship that. And on his logo for the Gaudiya Math, the most successful organization in India for spreading Krishna consciousness all over India, phenomenally successful, he put the printing press, and above it he put the words Rag Marg. And when Srila Prabhupada started the ISKCON movement in America, he put out a letter to, as soon as he got things going, to the devotees everywhere, and he said, the first one to buy a building will be able to house the first press in ISKCON. First order of business. And devotees were going everywhere to say, how can we get a building? And finally the devotees in Boston got their building. And Prabhupada went there, they bought a printing press, they established it there, and that was the first printing press in America, in ISKCON, and it was called ISKCON Press. Prabhupada named it ISKCON Press. And Prabhupada said, this will be the heart of the movement. And the devotee said, Prabhupada, you're the heart of the movement. Prabhupada said, yes, but the printing press is my heart. Because he was following the same mood as his spiritual master. So this idea of book distribution is not some far-flung or new, you know, it's some concoction that somebody came up with. This is coming down from the acharyas in our disciplic succession, and it's well-reasoned. Because by distributing mass quantities of books, we inject the philosophy of Krishna consciousness not just in the hearts and the minds of the people individually, but it begins to permeate society in a very practical way. And I can give examples of that, but I won't because we're running out of time. Historical examples. One example is in America, which was in the colonies and it was ruled by the British and then they broke away. Does that sound familiar to all of you? Yeah. That the revolution in America was sparked by a pamphlet written by Thomas Paine. It was called Common Sense. And they sold that pamphlet. You had to pay for it. And they sold it to almost the whole population of America. The distribution was so wide. And according to historians, that's what got people going for the revolution. Books are powerful. That's why in China, Vietnam, other places where they want to keep a tight grip on things, they don't let you just print any book willy-nilly. We went to Vietnam. We had to go through a whole process, censored by the government, to get one Bhagavad Gita available. And you have, they're really careful about where you sell it, because books get people stirred up, and they get them organized, and ideas start. So, on a practical point, for a beautiful temple community like this, we have so much appreciation because we started our temple in ISKCON Silicon Valley in a similar way, in a kind of an atmosphere like this. I think our temple was maybe a little smaller than this. And sometimes we'd get, yeah, there you go, see? And sometimes we'd get 3,000 people or something for the Janmashtami, and we say, maybe we should get a bigger place. And devotees kept saying, when are we going to get a big place? And I said, first define big. Then we'll start looking for what's big. And we kept preaching. What Prabhupada always said was, propagate Krishna consciousness in a compassionate way to as many people as possible. And then the results of that will be that Krishna will give you facility. It will come naturally. And not the other way around. And I told the devotees, if we distributed enough books and please Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya by doing that, Krishna will come and drop a temple on our head. And that's what happened. One day we were sitting there after marathon after marathon after marathon, where our main focus was not on fundraising but on how to distribute more and more books and keep increasing. And people said, where are you going to get the money for a temple? I said, I don't know, but Prabhupada said, if we distribute books, the money will come and they'll drop a temple on our head. And it kept getting more and more crowded. People kept coming and looking at me and said, where's the temple Krishna going to drop on our head? And then one day, on a historic day, we were sitting in our new temple, 5 minutes from Google, 10 minutes from Apple, in a beautiful temple. And I said, devotees, please look around, because it's happened. Krishna's dropped a temple on our head, and we're sitting inside it. It just came flying down from the air. It went bang and landed on us, and we're sitting inside. And here's the thing. If you get a temple and you don't have the compassionate spirit, it doesn't matter anyway, because it's useless. If you don't have the spirit of going out and saving conditioned souls and expanding the vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra, which is the Yuga Dharma, and you have a big building, you don't have anything. And there's lots of big buildings everywhere. Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said the same thing. After a wealthy disciple donated the temple in Bagh Bazar. And they moved out of their ratty little place in Ultadunga, the Gaudiya Math did. And then they had marble, they had everything nice, and the devotees started fighting over the rooms. Who gets what room, who joined first, and stuff like that. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, we were better off in Ultadunga with the preaching spirit. Keep that in mind always, because we are followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That means going out, meeting the people, making a sacrifice for the sake. And when we do that, we'll feel fully satisfied, and the bank account will fill up. The facilities will come flowing in ways that we could have never imagined. And we will be completely happy by that process. Om Tat Sat. Now we'll take some reflections or questions. Yes, Apurva Prabhu?
Not to diminish what you were saying about the prime principle. One of the points that I just wanted to add, because the devotees in the beginning of the movement, when that happened, 68 or 69. The
thing is, I don't think they can hear you in the back. Maybe you'll have to talk slow and I'll repeat, unless you have an extra microphone.
When Prabhupada made that request for the first temple that...
When Prabhupada made the first request for the temple to take on a printing press...
The impetus to really get them moving...
The impetus to get them moving...
was Prabhupada said, when you get that place, that will it'll house the printing press, but also I will come there and do my translating and live there for an extended amount of time.
He said, whoever gets the building first will not only get the printing press, but will get me. I'll come and live there with the press and do my translation work. Thank you. Nice point. Reflections, questions, Gora.
It says in Kali Yuga that even a pauper is proud of his penny. So I'm wondering, how do you give the best benefit to someone that you encounter on the street in the spirit of wanting to ignite the fire of knowledge within them, but they have this arrogant air about them that this fire of knowledge is, they already have a level of enlightenment. They're already successful, happy, etc. How do you try to cut through that to let them know that?
We could see how Lord, he was saying, how do you preach to somebody who's arrogant, even if they don't have anything and they're resistant to Krishna consciousness?
But they may have a lot.
They may have a little, but they're arrogant and they don't want to take anything more, right? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed by example various ways to preach. One way was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Mahaprabhu sat down and he didn't say a word. For 7 days, Sarvabhauma just pontificated. And Mahaprabhu just sat there and listened. I had an experience. I was in Santa Cruz, California, distributing books next to a couple of the devotees from our temple. I'm glad they were there as witnesses, because this actually happened. And I'll call him right now if you don't believe. So we met this man. He was probably in his 40s, and he had a daughter who was 12. And so I showed him the book, and he goes, oh, yeah, religion, you know, I already know all about this. And he said, you know, religions cause all the problems in the world anyway. And he was a very negative kind of person, but, you know, he's still holding the book and everything. He said, so, you know, so what's the deal with this? You know, you want money or what? And I said, no, you know, it's not like that. Just a donation. Ah, donation. I knew it. Here, take the book back. All religions are the same. They just want money. And you know what? And now he starts preaching to his daughter who's standing right next to him, 12 years old, sitting there. And he starts saying, you know, there's no difference between God and a light post anyway. It's all the same. He went on for about 5 minutes. I didn't say a word. I just stood there and I was like, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, right, right, right. And all of a sudden, for no particular reason except for there was no resistance in the air. It wasn't resisting, because whatever you resist persists. And when people give arguments, excuses, if you honor them, honor their objections, we honor objections, then what happened was a miracle happened. All of a sudden he goes, all right, here. And he gave me $7. He grabbed the book back and he gave it to his daughter. She says, here, you read this. You'll probably like it. And they walked away. That's a fact. That happened. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he sat in front of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He didn't say anything. And when he went to meet the Mayavadis, Prakashananda Saraswati's place with all these Mayavadis, they were all puffed up too. They're thinking, who's this guy? Sentimental, chanting, dancing, all this Hare Krishna stuff. And so he came there to this big assembly, and he just became very humble. And he sat down in the place where they washed their feet, and he's like, no, I'm not equal to you. You're the authorities here. And we find this when we distribute books on the street. One thing that I do, I was just teaching the devotees the other day. Over time, this was revealed to me, this one way of presenting. But I give people a book. I say, you know, I show them the book. I explain it to them. Well, I hand it over. I say, books on yoga and meditation. And it'll show you how to get free from stress. You've heard of stress before, right? And they say, yes or no. It doesn't matter because my next part is the same. And they say yes, and I say, yeah, but you don't look stressed. I say, in fact, you look spiritual. What's your secret? And if they say, no, I'm not stressed, and I say, I know, I can tell, but you look spiritual. What's your secret? So it's this question I ask people. I say, what's your secret? I'm becoming their disciple all of a sudden. I'm not preaching to them. I'm not condescending. That's not my mood when I go out and meet arrogant people. I know how to do it because I'm arrogant. And when people deal with me like that, I say, wow, that was like, this person is really intelligent. And I can, you know, give him whatever he wants. You know, he can hang around and stuff. And that's human psychology. So when I meet somebody, I say, so what's your secret? Please teach me, sir. Please tell me. And then they, you know, they'll tell you some secret that they have, what, you know, why it is they're so advanced and spiritual. And then you can go on presenting. So Prabhupada said book distribution is a great art, and everyone should learn this great art. It requires some effort to go out and meet people, as I started, and deal with the complexity. It's compassion. It has to be compassion to deal with people. And that is, there's nothing more rewarding than that. There's no higher sacrifice than that, to show compassion to living entities. And that's what our movement is. That's what moves in our movement. It's not about moving bricks. It's not about moving money. Those are insignificant. They don't even count. The only thing that counts is the compassion that we actually have in our hearts for other living beings. Our community, the way you are when you're welcoming every devotee that comes here, that's beautiful. That's something. Now expand it to everybody else. Take it to every shop and every door. Bring that same mood that is coming, radiating from your heart. Because you are chanting Hare Krishna, you're like that. You're becoming the highest yogis. Take that out and give it to people. It's the only valuable thing in this age of Kali. Everyone else is burning in envy. They're burning because of all the distractions in this material world. And they're being cheated at every turn. And things are looking worse. The whole world's going to be flooded in a couple of years. If it wasn't bad enough as it is, right? So this is the only hope for the world, is to take this message out door to door. And actually go and knock on the door and meet the people. And meet people from every culture. Meet the people, our friends from China. Meet our friends from Vietnam. And go out and meet the people from Canada and the people who speak French. And figure it out how to give them the Krishna conscious message. Everybody. If you do that, you become Uttama Adhikaris. That's the process of meditation in this age. Thinking day and night how to give this to other people. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. That's what the Panchatattva did. And that's what Prabhupada did. He caught the Jaladuta. That's impossible. And it's crazy. But he had the winning ticket. That's follow the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We don't know how to do it. Nobody knows. Prabhupada didn't know how to do it. He wrote that in his prayers on the way here. He said, I don't know how to do this, but I know it'll happen. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said it'll happen. So light this city on fire with knowledge. Make sure you cover every person. Count up how many people live in Scarborough and make sure that not one person goes without a book and a piece of prasadam. How's that for an occupation? That's doable. You could probably do that. Figure out how many people in Scarborough. Chart it out. Use all your IT skills to make sure that you don't miss one person. That'll please Lord Chaitanya more than anything on the planet. And all other collateral benefits will come flowing in the door so fast that you won't know what to do with them. Anything else? Yes? He said 12:15, so I'm just following. Didn't you say? Last word, yes? Prabhu.
He said 2:00.
This is the mood of the devotees here. This is such a beautiful place you have here. So much potential, and I'm really honored to be here in Scarborough. So please keep up the work that you're doing. Concentrate on these things that you're doing, this mood that you have here, this beautiful mood, this family mood, and extend it out to as many people as you can, and you'll be successful in all ways. You wanted to make a last point? Yes.
Not last point, last question. You inspired me like anything. However, I went out yesterday for 2.5-3 hours. I chanted for an hour, for 2 hours. I approached approximately 30 or 40 people and was able to get out 2 on chantings, 1 bhakti, eternal love, and 8 bliss balls. And I'm wondering...
Who do you guys
should go back in the kitchen because this isn't my...
That's not a however. I was waiting, what's the however part? That was fantastic. On chantings, bliss balls, Hare Krishna mantra. Our goal isn't to sell books. Don't change your idea of success, because that's what's tripping you up. You're thinking, I have to collect a certain amount of money. I have to sell a certain number of books. That's not it. The success is walking out the door. You're already successful. We don't preach this certain number of books. These goals we make are only to stimulate our team, you know, so we have something to shoot for, because it's human nature. You have to have a goal. But in the beginning, when I go to start a monthly Sankirtan festival in any temple in the world, and Nirkula will be my witness, we tell the devotees, we're not going out to sell books, because that's what everyone thinks. And then they freeze up and they think, I can't do that. What if somebody says no? That's not our goal. We're not trying to sell books. We're going out to touch the pavement. Because the hardest part of Sankirtan is getting everybody from here to there, just moving everybody out of the door. Right, Anshul? He knows. He's part of the team that moves everybody. And so once we get there, we touch the pavement together, we say, we're done, now everything else is extra. And our prime directive is to leave everyone with a good impression. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told his sannyasis, go out every day, knock at least 4 doors, and preach Hari Katha. He said, it'll be good for you, it'll be good for them, and even if they're not interested and they close the door, they'll see that a saintly person came around and they'll be affected. You don't know what kind of effect you're having. So don't measure it in terms of how many units of this or that. Besides, whatever you said was fantastic anyway. But just go out for doing the right thing, and first and foremost, we go out for our own self-purification. And don't worry about the results. That's up to Krishna, Lord Chaitanya. But you can stay in the kitchen because we love your cooking anyway.
Maybe both.
Okay. Yeah, really last word, because 2 minutes and I hear the conch shell warming up.
You said that as soon as we hear we have to go sell books, we might freeze up because people might say no. But some devotees say, they might say yes, and I don't know what to say to them, and I don't know how to answer their questions. That, you know, so they're afraid of the yeses.
That can be done with training, really easy. We do a training session that takes about 40 minutes. I can show devotees how to sell a Bhagavad Gita at any time, any place, any circumstance, to anyone, and it's guaranteed 100% or your money back from the seminar. So next time, if you're interested, we'll get together for that kind of thing. Vanchakalpadrubhascha, kripasindavevacha, patitanam pamitbhyo,
vaishnavevyo.
Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman.